listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Really? You would really do that?
Yeah. We're back.
Oh, my goodness.
We're back.
Oh, Lord, already.
Well, I can't wait till we have reality radio. The early bird starts this kind of stuff. Notice whenever there's a break, right, he gets in there and he kind of...
That's it.
It just used to be the beef with Roe Brown, right? Now he kind of stirs up the issues.
Yeah.
The early bird is... We're going to give you the bird right now. we're about to take your mic.
Goodness. Good morning, New Orleans.
Jeff Thomas, yeah, I would do that. We can't tell the listening audience what
I
would do that.
I got to compose myself now. I mean, I got to think about what we're going to talk about. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but I think that'd be a good move.
Listen, that would get national attention, right, and that would get the billions of corporations' attention. That's what
tell them go to heaven.
That's a nice way to put it. All right.
Take your money and go to heaven.
I'm with you.
Yeah. You know, we're already hurting, right?
You
can't hurt us anymore.
Right. I'm with you.
That's what I would do. Let me say something. If somebody's trying to hurt you, mm-hmm, right? If somebody has hurt you,
right?
They're not for you,
right?
They don't care about your families,
right?
They don't care about the people who count on you,
right?
They want to destroy you,
right? Hey, listen, I think that we're talking specifically about Entergy, and I think they need to have a symbiotic relationship with the business community in New Orleans, and that they are a monopoly. That they get a guaranteed rate of return, that they get to do whatever they want in the city, and that they don't have retribution for the business community.
And there's nothing wrong with being held accountable. It can actually make you a better elected official,
right?
Better person, a better company. But specifically, we were talking off air about how, you know, we kind of got punished for covering the story initially about the power plant. Mm-hmm. Did it in a journalistic way. And I know I dealt with four topics, never being personal. It was about those issues. And now we see two investigations.
Right.
We see an internal investigation by the company.
Right.
And now we see the city council, you know, even with members that approved it, now having an investigation. Now, whenever you enter into an investigation, a whole lot more things can be uncovered than the issue. And that is the issue about hiring actors. Did they violate the democratic process?
Well, that's exactly right. Listen, I get that Entergy wants to influence the city council to get.
I understand
what they
that.
Want. Everybody wants to do that. You know, I need some things done too. I want to call up my council person and members of council and say, listen,
we
want to
influence them. We want to influence them here. In terms of the issues for the people.
Right.
That's part of it.
That's a part of the deal. That's a part of the American democratic process, right? But where it becomes problematic in this instance is not only did they try to influence the system, they corrupted the system, apparently, by having paid actors, by distorting the reality, by presenting a perception to the city council. Look, if you go to the city council and say, look, I want to do this power plant, and I think it's a good thing, and I got these polls to show it, and I got the people with me.
Come talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
I like those points that are in contention.
Right, and present your case, and put your best case forward. Put your best foot forward.
Point, counterpoint.
Exactly right. But what they did was go one step further to try to ensure that they would be able to do what they wanted to do by corrupting the process, in my estimation. Mm-hmm. And the way they did that is with these paid actors. So they distort the reality, they distort the perception that the city council members have. The city council members are gauged in public opinion, and they're elected to do the will of the people.
No doubt about it.
Entergy is saying, listen, this is the will of the people.
Yeah.
Look at the people here. But these are paid actors.
Right.
Then that corrupts the system, and that's a bad thing. And that is problematic. And that transitions from being a good player, a good corporate citizen, trying to get what you want. Everybody does it, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But when you go, I think they went a couple of steps too far in this situation.
Well, it's interesting right now because we've gotten a call. I've actually got a couple of calls on the show. Is that look? We need the companies here to be successful.
Right.
But we need them to be successful in their ability to make money.
Right.
In their ability to employ, in their ability to whatever form of capitalism they're engaged in, because it benefits the folk here. They're already clearing that site. I've gotten called from calls from African American men and women who do business, who have trucking companies, who do site clearing, hauling, removal. None of them are participating in the site preparation.
Right, right.
Now we have companies that have been begging to do business with Entergy. Very successful minority companies that none of them. So why hasn't our city council said, hey, hold on a second, the site is being prepared.
Right.
Please give us
right.
a list
right.
of New Orleans East businesses, African American men and women businesses, or local businesses that are involved in site preparation.
Amen, brother.
If I were on the city council, so that would be a good step in me saying, oh, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. So they do have minority companies that
right. and they can,
that
and
are out there doing this work right now, and this is what they're making right now. If I were Entergy, I would have started like that because, hey, look, y'all were against us, WBOK. Mm-hmm. Y'all, it created innuendo. You said this, mm-hmm. but this is what we're doing in site preparation right mm-hmm. now. We have 100% minorities and locals that are doing this work. We have 30%. We have something percent. That's what I would have done.
All right, and listen, and I hear you. And I got to tell you, my beef is with the city council. Early on, that was my position.
It's about the regulator.
Right. We need to have contracts. Yeah. We need to have jobs built into this deal. And yeah. we didn't. And we don't. And that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Entergy did what they do. I'm not mad at them. They're supposed to.
But what I don't understand is, given that this has gotten national attention, right? Mm-hmm. It's gotten articles in local press. Mm-hmm. Everybody's talked about it. Why wouldn't someone on the council say, right, be at least tracking this, right? Especially given
sure.
the level of opposition. If I were on the city council, I would be doing updates. I'd say, okay, here's a report from site preparation.
Right.
This is what Entergy's doing right now.
Right.
These are the companies that they're using right now.
Right.
This is how much they're spending right now. I don't understand that,
right.
especially since the city council regulates that utility. It's an opportunity for them to show that not only are you holding their feet to the fire, but you're making sure that a lot of that money stays here.
Right. And listen, now today the city council meets. If people are really concerned about this, they can go down, they can voice their opinions. And then also there is a meeting in June of the utility commission of the city council. I think it's June 10th,
yeah.
memory serves, at June 14th at 10 p.m. And so if people are really concerned about this, and we're right, then people still have an opportunity to step up and effect change.
It's an opportunity for the new city council to do
yes,
something new.
Yes, how about that?
Line one, Big Al, you're on with OT and Jeff Thomas.
I'm already down by the city council. I've been out here 7:30, man. I got my bikinis on. Ready.
you got
that's
your canoe?
Do
you have your life jacket in your canoe? Because the pumps may not be working.
Right. It did rain this
yeah,
morning.
Yeah, I'm messing with it. But look, how much is enough money? And let me say this to you, bro. If we had done what the council, the entity did with those actors, we'd be in jail. They have the pipe daylight to our behind, bro. Mm-hmm. You do anything to get what you want, bro. What about the needy and but the greedy gets it? So Oliver, I want to thank you, bro, for what you do. And look, sometimes, bro, we got so many issues to deal with, bro. It looks like you feel like the Lone Ranger. But let me say this as I go, because this is a situation coming up. The Super Bowl coming up in 6 years.
2024.
Let me tell you something. How many rich people gonna get some money, made some money? Because I don't see none of us look like that. So I'm gonna get off on it, and I'm gonna talk to you later, right. And I'll see you tomorrow. But when we talk about what's happening today with the energy and other situations, the swimmers and all that. All right, I'll be here. All right.
Thank you. Yeah, Super Bowl in 2024. This is a great opportunity for the Black Chamber, especially to transition from more of a social networking organization
mm-hmm.
To a policy working organization to prepare for this $500 million minimum event. So I would hope, and I just went, we were both at the Black
yeah,
Chamber.
Great luncheon.
It was a wonderful mm-hmm. luncheon. I think they're great at putting together social events.
Mm-hmm.
But this major Super Bowl, I mean, even if you're not going to use other major events, right? If you're not going to use a Jazz Fest, mm-hmm. Essence Fest, Mardi Gras, mm-hmm. if you're not going to use these other events, right, then knowing that the Super Bowl is coming here, the Black Chamber has 6 years now to put together a strategy mm-hmm. and a policy that attacks certain areas where you know folk are going to make money. So I would hope that the members of the Black Chamber, the leadership of the Black Chamber, are really starting now.
Yes. Yes. You know. And I think that's it. But let me tell you, I'm glad you brought up the NFL. There's something else I wanted to talk about.
Absolutely.
Tell
absolutely.
You.
Stand up.
I'm on my knee, man. Right now, I'm taking a knee for social injustice.
Oh, hold on.
And let me tell you, play the national anthem. I dare you, Lee. I'm on my knees right now.
Oh, no. Man, don't do that.
Let me just say. It is despicable to me in my estimation. Mm-hmm. But ironic that on the day we see the way the police roughed up a basketball player for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh, the kid Brown. That right. was young man just shot in a wheelchair someplace.
Yeah.
There have been several incidences of murder and brutality just in the last few days.
Sure. And so the NFL has taken the side of not social justice, but corporate America and white Americans who choose to ignore the reality of the plight of African Americans who are abused by police officers. I mean, that was the original reason Colin Kaepernick took a knee, and that's the reason that players across the league took knees, white and black, the NFL has obscured this and has instead the NFL had a great opportunity to help educate the public to push this narrative out into the American space.
Donald Trump and Mike Pence were mm-hmm. brilliant.
They were.
And how they used this as a divisive tool.
They were.
To get it away from the issue that it really meant.
Which is why the NFL let the ball drop.
Eric
fumbled
Reed.
The ball.
If you could
use a football analogy.
If you could question Colin Kaepernick, right? Mm-hmm. He's still better than 80% of the quarterbacks in the league in terms statistically, mm-hmm. but Eric Reed is better than 95% of the safeties.
Right, sure.
In the league,
and both of them are looking for jobs.
And looking for a job.
Right, sure. The fact is that the NFL has had an opportunity to change the narrative. The NFL could have stood up to Pence and what's that guy's name? The president? Trump. I kid. But the NFL had an opportunity to really push this narrative, to really say, listen, we have a problem in America, and the problem in America is that the treatment of African Americans by police officers, by the
disparities
we talk about.
Explain what the NFL did in their policy.
So for those who don't know, right, what the NFL did was they came up with a new policy, and the policy is that if you are a player and you're on the field during the national anthem, you have to stand. That's the new NFL policy.
Or stay in the locker room.
That's right. So if you don't stand, then the team gets fined. Now, the way around that is you don't have to be on the field during the national anthem.
Right.
So you can come out after that.
You can do what Pittsburgh players chose to do. Many of them did.
So now I'm wondering, are some players going to come out and stand and other players going to stay in the locker room and then come out? How's that going to work?
That's a worse look.
To me, that's a bad optic. Right. I agree. So I'm not sure. So in doing this, mm-hmm. The NFL tried to strike a balance, right? They tried to punt.
They tried to
play it right down the middle.
They kicked it right back to the Players Association.
Well, right, but what did they?
Because there's definitely going to be a dispute there.
They went against the players mm-hmm. and what the players are standing for. They had an opportunity to stand with the players and say, "Listen, you know, there is social injustice. There are these issues that you're talking about, and we as a league aren't going to stand for it. And we as a league, while we think you should stand, what we want to do is we want to put this out in the public sphere." They didn't do that.
Well,
I
agree, Jeff Stradamus.
Uh-huh.
I think they've created a potentially an even worse situation, because especially since what we've seen what happened just in the last few months with people getting shot, beaten, and brutalized. So the optics to me are worse with if a third of your team stays inside.
Sure, and all the white players come out and
all the white players
and
come
the black
out,
players. Really? Is that what we're aiming toward? Segregation in the NFL now?
They would have been better if they would have made a decision one way or another.
They didn't. Well, they did, though. They did. Well, they made a decision. Their decision, they actually did make
a
decision.
But it was a half-hearted,
bull crap
decision.
I'm wrong. They didn't punt. They made a decision. They made a choice. They made a choice to stand with corporate America, with Make America Great people again, and against the players who are standing for injustice. That's what they did. That's what this ruling does. That's what this change in policy does. This policy goes against the players who were kneeling and says, listen, we ain't having no, because you can't kneel anymore. It's against the rules.
I think they're potentially contributing to a dying league.
Well, listen, that ultimately is true. Because as people understand more about concussions, as people understand more about the long-term health detriments that you suffer as a result of playing in the NFL, then more and more people are going to not let their kids play football. You going to let your son play Little League football?
No. America's thirst for violence and blood is the only reason why I think that it's not in as bad a shape as it could be, because we are inherently a very violent people. We love blood and guts. We honor disrespect and degradation.
Yes.
And until we begin to deal with that internally, spiritually, mentally, soulfully, then football still has a chance. But I don't wish for my son to play football. I'm gonna try to direct him towards other sports. I am.
Yeah. Basketball. He'll be good at that naturally.
Golf.
Probably.
You know, he'll be tall.
That's right. I'm making it funny there, right?
You got big feet and big hands already.
He should be able to shoot.
So it's going to be interesting to watch. But I agree with you that I think they created a potentially a worse situation.
They have. I think this is going to blow up in their face. I want to see the first, I guess, the Hall of Fame game. Mm-hmm. I want to see what happens. are the black players all? How many black players are going to stay in the league? And then here's going to be the thing. What's going to happen when those black players who chose to stay in the locker room run out after the national anthem? We already had fans who were booing the players who were kneeling. So now what's going to happen? They're going to get, you know, ushered into a rain of boos? I mean,
maybe they'll lock them in the locker room.
They might. I tell you, this to me is yet to be seen. I personally,
it's going to be made for TV.
Let me tell you, I personally have a real problem with the NFL. I personally love the Saints as much as love football, and you know, was hurt when Marcus Williams tackled the ground and
that was the best air tackle in history.
It really was. It was by far. I still smart about that. I think the Saints would have gone on and beat Philly and won the Super Bowl, but that didn't happen. But honestly, I have a hard time looking at the NFL these days. It's difficult for me to follow Drew Brees and
especially when every day you have another report of somebody being killed, murdered, shot, brutalized.
And I know this is a league that looks the other way.
Yeah. Well, there's so much to deal with. Legislative session. I loved what the way you've set the table for the talk about the legislative session. Even though we're still looking for a balanced budget, even though we're still challenged with the cuts in health care and education and critical programs, in many ways you were very proud of the Black Caucus.
Yes.
A lot of the leadership there. I really, and we have talked about legislators and missed opportunities in the past.
Sure.
But I am very proud. Many of our New Orleans delegation and many in the Black Caucus took just a real heroic position about fighting for all Louisianans, really.
That's right. And let me tell you, I am tickled pink. I don't know if I want to say it. I mean, I am.
Well, tickled.
Yeah.
Caramel.
All right. That, you know, gee whiz.
Cooked caramel.
Tickle pink. Was that some kind of racial?
Linguistic racism.
Exactly right. Wow. Thank you for that. So I am tickled. How about that? I don't even like saying I'm tickled.
The power of advertising.
I'm a little uncomfortable with myself right now. Let me just say, I'm very happy with the efforts of our legislative Black caucus. They have done great things this session.
Yes.
I mean, they are transforming the state. We are going, this is the only way Louisiana is going to shift from last to first is through policy changes.
Right.
And we have had some serious, serious policy changes that have been the result of the efforts of the legislative Black caucus.
Look, some folk will get mad. I think, you know, there are some folk, they want us to beat up on elected officials all the time.
Yeah. Say anything nice.
They want us to hold them accountable all the time. And yes.
And I am.
And we do. But specifically, kudos to Senator Carter and his efforts to deal with guns of mass destruction.
Absolutely.
You got to give him credit.
Absolutely.
There. Kudos to Joe Bowie for continuing to community education. Schools and accountability. Absolutely. In education. He has not relented from that.
Absolutely.
And whether you like him or not, J.P. Morrell has some of the most progressive legislation that's ever come out of Louisiana when you talk about prison reform. And accountability in the criminal justice system.
Absolutely.
Whatever he's done before in the past.
Right.
This piece, the way he stacked unanimous juries, the way him and Pat Smith have dealt with the rights of felons and the ability to vote again, is the most progressive legislation to come out of this state in a very long time.
Absolutely right. And then if we dig even deeper, so those are absolutely right. I think everybody's aware of those things. And those triple kudos, bouquets, I mean, the highest praise that you can give to somebody, they deserve it. He deserves it for those things. But if you dig deeper into the weeds, he's even done things that are more impactful. You were talking earlier about gentrification.
Absolutely.
And Airbnb.
Yes.
I mean, one of his bills that's going to have to go, it got passed through the House and the Senate, it's going to have to go before the entire state, is if your property tax, it's a fight on gentrification and Airbnb. Mm-hmm. If your property taxes go up 100%, then you don't have to pay that increase the next year. It gets phased in over 4 years.
Absolutely.
And you pay 25%. So, you know, what was happening is
that tremendous bill to fight against gentrification.
That changes the game. I mean, too often, black people who were in their houses and used to paying, you know, the same amount property values have changed. And so now they can't afford to pay their property taxes. Your property tax bill went from $1,000 to $2,500. Right. And you're on a fixed income. How do you make up that difference? How can you do it? You can't. His legislation prevents that, you from immediately getting kicked out of your house.
And it's a Senator Morrell.
It's a Senator J.P. Morrell. I mean, it's a brilliant move. It's a brilliant piece of legislation. It's a brilliant piece of policy that the state needs, that the city needs. And it helps protect homeowners, you know. And so I hear that music. I know Lee's pointing to me.
Yeah, but also the efforts of many in the Black caucus to slow down this Harris train.
Oh, we're going to get on that when we come back.
Also tremendous. And we're going to talk about it when we come back. Jeff, you said I told you so.
Did I? I didn't mean to.
But first of all, what I want to talk to when we come back is that, you know, your instincts that we were heading down the wrong track with this deal. Mm. But now your instincts to say that we need an independent analysis so we can at least make sure we get the best possible deal. You're always ahead of the game. Jeff Thomas, Think 504. Call in and weigh in, guys. This is a Good Morning Show with OT and the Early Bird. We'll be back after the break.
You're listening to WBOK, New Orleans.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
Jeff Thomas,
What happened, bro? Tell me.
You done got us in trouble again.
What is this about me?
For our listening audience out there, y'all are not going to believe this. Our phone lines just went dead. We have people texting that are trying to call in on a lot of critical issues. Somebody has gave the order.
Shut them up.
I hope the lights don't go out.
Well, that would be ironic, wouldn't it?
Our phone lines, I'm about to give you our phone number, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you can call on the bat line.
Yeah.
Help. Right? Maybe the early bird.
Oh, my goodness.
If you're trying to call, keep trying.
We're working on it.
Send up a smoke signal, something. Jeff Thomas, this is not the first time you've been on.
Yes.
And the lines have been cut off in the middle of critical communications about political, corporate, or public policy interests in this town. Now, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy. I'm not saying it was done on purpose.
No.
But I'm saying it happened again.
Yeah. I think, you know, I take full responsibility. Every time I come on, I bring this.
This is the third time you've been on that. We've been in the middle of discussions about a lot of issues that are critical to the folk that you've researched, that we have data, we have support, we have stuff that is factual that to share with citizens. This is the third time, bro.
Entergy did it. I'm just telling
No,
Harris did it. Harris did it. Let me just tell you. AT&T did it.
Boy, that's some crap. That's some crap.
I just got that. I saw what you did there. That's some crap.
That's some crap.
Harris did that. Harris did it. You're right. You're right.
But back to Harris, though. There was a memo going around in black media, people like yourselves, other major black media, who would just... Now, they weren't taken aback. They weren't flabbergasted. They weren't appalled. They were pissed off. I mean,
The phones are off. FCC can't call.
Yeah, they were peed off about the fact that Harris was advertising with everybody, but black media.
Yeah, go figure.
So here you are. You're trying to get something passed in the dark of the night, 6 years before it's up, and they made this major push. And they didn't even consider African-American journalists, African-American media.
Sure. Well, I'm certainly.
But they want our.
They want our support. They want us to go gamble there. And they certainly want our legislators to support them. And they certainly want us to patronize their business. But the fact is that they don't want to reciprocate. And that's what I was talking about earlier with Entergy, that we expect our corporate citizens to be good stewards, to be good business people.
And not to be so sensitive that you can't answer tough questions.
Sure. And let me tell you, I mean, you have to place the value in African Americans beyond getting money from us. That money needs to flow to us.
That is a very good point, Jeff. And before we get into the weeds of the Harris thing, because I want you to talk about what was it that put together the fact that this Harris deal wasn't a good deal for you. And you actually paid a price. Their people actually blacklisted you.
Mm-hmm. I got a call from their agency saying
you have over 250,000 subscribers. Right. But they actually blacklisted you because of your editorials about the fact that it wasn't a good deal. Not that we didn't need to cut a deal, but the fact that it wasn't a good deal now.
Right.
So what is it? We're major corporate interests, right? Mm-hmm. Even if they're African American CEOs, even if they're African American leadership, that they want relationships with us, but they don't want to have financial relationships with us.
Right, because they don't place the value on what we bring to the table. They want to use and abuse us, and they want to extract from us. They don't want to invest in us. And so our viewpoint is only good when it aligns with theirs. When we disagree, then we certainly have no value to them. I did get a call from their agency and said, you know, you've been the leader in the opposition. And so
let me say this. Look.
I didn't oppose the deal. No, I'm not opposed to the casino.
All you did was wrote an editorial.
Correct.
That said, hey, let's slow down.
Yeah.
There's an opportunity for a better deal.
Right.
And what?
Yeah, so, you know, listen, if you're not for me, you're against me. If you're not 100% in, then you're against me. And I get that. But the fact the lines are working. Look at that. It's amazing.
Early Bird
said a little shine on them, and
Early Bird said he was going to do something.
Well, he did it. He made it happen. Boy, that bird.
Right. Now, before we go to the lines, 504-260-9265, y'all please hurry up and call before these people cut us, before Jeff Thomas says something else.
I'm about to talk now.
And they cut us back off again. Let's flip the script.
Yeah.
You're saying that though we needed to scale it back and table the Harris deal. You and John Kennedy are on the same page.
Yeah, well, for, a little bit, yeah.
For the absolutely. First time.
He didn't call me, though.
For the first time. I would love to see you call him because he needs to do – you need to talk to him about an editorial on that piece.
I will.
Because you need to get absolutely. This. I think that's important.
I think I will.
But you also right. said this is the time to do an independent analysis mm-hmm. and maybe get to a better – with the best possible deal, now we don't need to wait too long.
Right.
Why that train of thought?
Well, listen, right. Here's the thing. Early on, we talked about the fact that the license was of value. And for the state to get no right. money for the license, it would be the legislators shirking their responsibility, right. committing political malpractice in office, mm-hmm. Malfeasance almost.
Right.
That is not really malfeasance. But, I mean, you get my point, that right. they are not doing their job. And so... it's important that that license mm-hmm. value be understood, and it's important that we get some independent. You've been the one putting that out there tremendously, right. and I thank you for it.
Independent analysis.
You were the first person I ever heard say yeah. that, you know, and so now I hear it everywhere.
Right.
But the fact is, we need to know what the value of that license is. Now, 6 months ago, when I was first talking about it, or 3 months ago when I was first talking about it, that license was. In my estimation, close to $1 billion.
Right.
But now that's changing, and it's changing dramatically because of new legislation that's right. just come through the legislature,
right.
which basically makes every riverboat casino
a land-based casino.
They can convert. They have right. the option to convert to a land-based casino. Right. So you got to figure they all are going to do it because it cuts their costs.
Right.
They get to fire those captains who right. do nothing and, you know, get off the water.
They can build on land.
Be on land. And most of them already have on-land facilities
right.
anyway.
Right.
And so the value then of the license for Harris, which was the only one in the state.
It would go down.
It's going to go down. So, but the fact is we don't even know what it is now.
But why mm-hmm. wouldn't our leadership have this type of due diligence that you've just laid out? It would seem like that ball would have been rolling to do that independent analysis, to come up with a conclusion as quickly as possible.
You would think that you would think that the guys who are saying, listen, let's make all of casinos land based.
Right.
But before we do that, let's first get a deal. Let's get the most money we right. can get out of Harris. And then
the lines are lit up, man. Let's go to the lines right now. Powerful topics right now. Mm-hmm. Darryl, God bless, man. Thank you so much for holding. You're on with Jeff Thomas, OT and Early Bird.
Yeah, good morning, OT. Good morning, Jeff Thomas.
Good morning.
I was saying about the commission, about the NFL fans.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, these guys, they did right, you know, and the commission got in there with Donald Trump. So that's about a bunch of racist stuff like that. Because these guys, if I was them, I'd still in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody going to tell me because that's my right. Now, for there, the center, oh, you need to get that queen on out of here because nobody can hit over there.
Go ahead, Darryl.
That's some crap.
Go ahead, Darryl.
Darryl, thank you. But hold on a second now.
Uh-huh.
When you talk about independent analysis now, there's mm-hmm. some school of thought. There are people who are studying this whole gaming issue right now, questioning the spinoff of the economic value that it really brings.
Absolutely.
And look, I tell people in business, when business is successful, it's 2.5 times multiplier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Usually in entertainment and sports, tourism, you can get maybe 5.5, 6 times the multiplier in terms of success when it's successful. But there are folk who are saying now that, quote unquote, Louisiana gaming or gambling in many cases, if it's not a net loss, it's really negligent in mm-hmm. terms of what it actually brings to your society, especially in a vibrant tourism mm-hmm. or business economy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true of gaming across the country. And, you know, the fact is gaming revenues are flattened out. It's not
people don't have it.
People are just aren't going because they recognize that the house is always going to win.
Right.
But where casinos are now making their money is through entertainment, through leisure.
Right.
So that's why Harris wants to build this new hotel. That's why Harris wants to build these new theaters.
Complex.
That's exactly right, because that's where the money is. And so I just want to make sure that the state – now, I spoke to Senator J.P. Morrell yesterday, and he got me straight on a couple of things about this that I was – a little foggy on, and maybe I was wrong about. But I'll say this.
Share, please.
That my understanding has been that the money that the state receives from Harris is based on gaming
revenue.
And that's true. And I said, well, wait a minute. If we're only going to get money on gaming revenues, and they are going to be making all of this extra
absolutely.
Profit on these new mm-hmm. amenities that they're building in, mm-hmm. then we're losing out there, too.
Right.
So But he says that, in fact, it's based on profit. It's okay. based on profit. Now, so, but that, and he and I talked about this too, the fact is that, you know, you can hide profit in so many ways. You can add so many different extraneous, yeah. foolish expenses yeah. that yeah. aren't real.
Right.
But so, I mean, I think that the state has to dig deep into the weeds and make sure that there's a clear definition of what the profit is and that they don't get to pad, you know, expenses and say, well, we paid Tyrone $16 extra
right.
last week, so instead of $30, we made $50.
We're going to get to this last call on Harris, and then we're going to get to the topic we talked about before, and that is the fight between this Republican senator and representative. But we haven't heard any censorship yet.
Nothing.
The thing is kind of gone. But we're going to go to Oyelowo right now on the Harris deal. Oyelowo, Mr. President, you're on with Jeff Thomas, OT, and Early Bird.
All right. Hi, guys. How y'all doing?
What's up, Oyelowo?
Okay. Night wall, put your night wall hat on.
Owen.
I put my six wall hat on.
Owen.
Harris is nothing but a hustle.
yeah.
It's a shell game.
yeah.
Here's what I mean by that.
Yeah.
Okay. Harris doesn't supply us any jobs or economic stuff that they promise.
Mm.
They don't give the fire, water, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I knew you guys were short for time, so I cut it down.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans is Candyland, as in the plantation in Django Unchained.
Wow. Go ahead,
okay? All right. It's Candyland.
All right.
Here's how the white boy thinks in Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Orleans probably has like one gambler, hypothetically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But the state knows that all the stuff we got, like the Super Bowl, the Final Fours, the Faz Essence Value Classic, that one gambler might turn into, hypothetically speaking, 20 gamblers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, keep that thought in the back of your head.
It is.
Why you don't think other parishes, white folks like Hammond, Shreveport, Alexandria, and et cetera, are banging down the doors to get this? If the hustle was so good, why nobody else don't want? Ask yourself that question. Because we're the only ones that can provide that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we got all these excess things. And it's all about the cut. Okay, with the average gambler that Orleans have, plus the other people that might stumble in for all the other stuff we have, let's just say the cut is $100 million. But those other parishes don't have the extra stuff that we has in gravy and out of stretch.
You don't have the synthetic. You don't have the fentanyl.
$15 million. You get a better cut.
Uh-huh.
And they know we ain't going to pay our workers, which we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And we got no politicians that's going to stand up to them. All the politicians, personally speaking, is like the Samuel L. Jackson character at the Django Unchained. Only one we got is boy, but that's one man's opinion. Okay. It's all about the cut. Ask yourself, why don't other pastors want this? Now, getting to the least, okay, here's how you play them. If it's so good and you want it, why don't somebody else take it? If you want us to have it, here's how we want it. Rules gonna change because we got all this excess, and we know that y'all can't do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the 30-day lease, y'all can keep it. Ask yourself this question, Jeff and OT. Why do we need Harris? Harris does not do nothing for us. We're making money already.
I say let the city and the state operate it.
Hey, there you go.
Let them just hire management.
We're making
company.
Money already.
Right.
I mean, like in the famous scene in The Godfather when the Italian brothers went to the Godfather to try to do something.
Yeah.
Well, the Godfather said, the Italian brothers, I really don't need what you're trying to bring in because I'm making money already.
Right.
But they knew that he had all the extra stuff to bring, as in all links. We got the extra stuff.
Yes, we do.
So the deal is a bad deal. We don't need Harris. We're making money already. We're sitting on money already. Let somebody else take the responsibility
right.
of the fire department, water, this, that, and other. I hope I made myself clear. I was rushing.
Thank you so much. Oyelowo made a lot of sense, especially
sure.
if you piggyback Darryl's piece about do we really need it.
Mm.
The convention center is sitting on $250 million. So you're showing that, hold on a second. So we got an entity right now that's so vibrant.
It's our tax dollars too.
That they're raking in the dough. So Harris, where's your pot?
Sure.
Of $250 million. That's a great point.
Listen, I'd like to see a casino operator that is based here in New Orleans who would be able to operate that. I don't know that. Obviously, there aren't any. Mm-hmm. But we don't have the expertise.
No.
So that poses in my mind some difficult issues. But Harris does bring money to the table, mm-hmm. and we need to extract as much of it as we can get if they're going to be here. They're going to be here.
I agree.
And so
a deal needs to be done, but
right.
it's something that's best for everybody,
where
the city can be guaranteed its casino reimbursement services, not just a hope and a promise,
right.
and where the city and where the state can get an investment so we can hopefully go into education or health to deal with our fiscal problems we have right now. Look, but this other issue what you talked about, though, that was kind of swept under the rug, where there's a state senator and state representative in a drunken stupor fighting. Well, first of all, what were they fighting about?
I'm not sure what they were fighting about, but to me that's irrelevant. What's relevant is that they were performing in a
way. Law enforcement was called in?
They were performing in a way that's unbecoming of state representatives. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it goes against the rules of both the House and the Senate. And civil disobedience is not allowed. It's a reason for sanctioning. It's a reason that they should be admonished. And they can't just say, "Well, we're sorry, we didn't mean it." You know what? If I hit somebody and I didn't mean it, it was an accident, the police are going to still arrest me. And so the fact is, sure, they didn't want to charge each other, but that's okay. Maybe they don't have criminal charges involved here, but the state legislature has a responsibility to censure these two men.
Well, let's go to the lines right now. We've got a call all the way from Ascension Parish.
Is that right?
I think it's first time caller. Man, you never know who's listening to the Good Morning Show. First time caller, AJ, you're on with OT, the early bird, and Jeff Thomas. Talk to us, AJ.
Hello there. How are you fellas doing this morning?
We're doing fine.
I'm happy to be with you.
Good to have you, AJ.
I bring you greetings, Big Easy, from Little Difficult.
Donisonville, huh?
Talk to us.
I have been listening with great interest this morning. There are some topics that you have been speaking about that. I just wish I was in there with you.
We'd love to invite you. We'd love to next month, man. Maybe we can get you in the studio with us
this morning.
Thank you. Now, next month, come on and join us in the studio, man.
Well, I may very well do that because I sound like I'm listening to my show.
Right.
I have a radio talk show in Donaldsonville, Louisiana. My topics are pretty much the same ones you have.
What's the name of your show and how can we get it?
Say again?
What's the name of your show and how can we get it?
The name of my show is But on the Other Hand.
Okay.
I'm on the dial at KBRS 106.9 FM, simulcasted along with KKAY 1590 AM.
Wow.
And I'm on at 7:23 mornings to 8:23, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And we do have a rebroadcast the same evening that the live show is presented. So that's
excellent.
Wednesdays and Fridays.
We're definitely going to tune in, Brother AJ.
Oh, yes. And your folks can stream me down there as well as I'm. I've had
softly bigger you,
OT. To stream you all this morning, and it has been an earful, and I sure hope my folks enjoy what has been being said.
Thank you.
It's good. Before I get to what I'd like, I'd just like to mention this thing that you all talked about it with the NFL and this new rule that they've stay in the locker room, boy. You know what I'm saying?
right.
But you know something? The
eyeballing me,
thing
boy.
About this whole thing is that third verse of the national anthem mm-hmm. has not ever come up in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why, with that ended, how did it get to be the national anthem in the first place? They dissed us completely in adopting that, I think, in 1931. Well, they were dissing us all over the place mm-hmm. at that time. But how do they expect us to have a deep heartfelt feeling for that national anthem, to put our hand on our chest and stand up in such patriotic fervor with that third verse in it? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely.
You got five fingers on your hand. They got about five verses in the national anthem. Take any one of those verses out, then it's not the same song. take any finger off of your hand, yeah, it's not the same hand.
No doubt.
So what we have to do is respect. They want us to respect a national anthem that has that third verse in it that is just absolutely horrible. And I don't know how that right. has not
and
been
And it's not only, AJ, it's not only about the national anthem. Yeah. It is that the NFL has sided with against social justice. They have gone against the injustice that African Americans suffer every day in this
country. They've taken a stand.
But that is the result of that Donald Trump syndrome. Mm-hmm. They are kowtowing to Donald Trump in this regard, and this new rule represents an ultimate victory for him. He's quite pleased with what happened.
But AJ and
Jeff, Mr. Think 504, it highlights something even bigger than that. It highlights the disparity in terms of earnings and wealth in this country, because to side with black people is not an economic sustainable model.
So it's
a deep. So when you see black elected officials go against their own communities, when you see African American business leaders and social elites go against their own community,
it's
how do you side with something that does not have the money or that is not disciplined enough to use their money
to channel the money,
even invest in a cause that benefits our community? So, in some ways, the owners in the NFL, they made an economic decision.
Absolutely.
They're saying for us to, middle America, the upper middle class, that's where the money is. If we side, if I'm on the side of justice, I'm broke.
That's right. That's right. And the only way we're going to make money in the NFL.
And of course, that's enough grist for the mill of four or five more shows.
Absolutely.
Books, really.
Absolutely.
But the bottom line is that there's so much to talk about, and if you did it in a chronological order, you start with the idea of the way it was in the beginning, and whatever semblance of vestige of those ways, the way we were looked at right in the very beginning of us coming here, there are too many strings still attached to that way. Just too many for this day and age. We should not have any vestige of that kind of thing at all.
So let's talk about left hooks and right jabs and shots in Crown Royal, AJ.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, 50 cuffs is what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. 50 cuffs in a bar, 1 o'clock in the morning, what I call a drunken brawl.
Mm-hmm.
Of people who were fighting on the job, so to speak, because these fisticuffs arose between a state representative and a state senator at 1 o'clock in the morning, mind you, as I said, at their favorite watering hole, from the way the owner of the establishment made it sound. But nonetheless, I call it a drunken brawl. I heard you call them a stupor just now. I think, O.T., you said that they were in a stupor. But they were not in a stupor. They were in an excited state what do you call it? What did the governor call it? A spirited debate in passion.
Mm. Oh.
They were in passion such that they argued to the point where they engaged in fisticuffs.
And let me just interject this one point. If one had hit the other and the other fell and hit his head and died, as happens sometimes in fisticuffs, as you described, then he would be charged with manslaughter. So this is not just a simple little two good old boys getting together and wrestling. This was far worse. This was sinister. This was a criminal act in many regards, in my estimation. And the fact that they were buddies and didn't want to bring charges is the only reason that it's not criminal. But certainly they were disturbing the peace. They were, and that's a criminal act. And the police could have and should have arrested them. And if they were two black men fighting outside in a bar, at 1 a.m. and some white deputies roll up, I imagine that they might get cited for disturbing the peace, at least. But the fact is that nothing has happened to them. The fact is that they have just swept this under the rug, and the rules of the Senate and the rules of the House explicitly forbid this kind of behavior, that they should be sanctioned, and if you get three of these kinds of acts, you can be expelled from both the House and the Senate. And the fact is that nothing has happened to them. They should at least be censored. But, you know, we have something that's similar, and you want to talk about that, AJ, and I'll let you bring it up. Yeah. I'm not sure that I agree with you 100%, but I'll let you make your point, and then we can talk about it and listen to what our callers have to say. Go ahead.
You're talking about the issue involving former state senator Troy Brown.
Right.
And I did bring Troy Brown up in it because the first time I heard about these fisticuffs at this late night hour in this bar, this happened on a Tuesday, and I had considered talking about it on my show that next day, that Wednesday. But I know I waited until Friday. And it seemed, and all of the reports that I had heard up to that time seemed like this was going to be just a good old boys activity, and it was going to be looked at as two friends just, you know, having a little fun. But then the next thing I see was them putting yellow police tape around one of the legislators' desk in the Capitol.
Right, and instead of them taking this seriously, it's a joke.
It's a joke.
Right, and it's not a joke. I'm with you.
It's not a joke. And then my mind harkened back to Troy Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And with Troy Brown saying explicitly that he did not believe he could get a fair shake in an expulsion hearing in the House and the Senate. And that's why he resigned. But you know something? I saw what happened. I visualized what happened with these two guys fighting with the same thing that happened to Troy Brown, except that Troy Brown got some ugly press. They talked about Troy Brown punching one person in the eye, one woman in the eye, and biting his wife. And then he became a wife beater. But those are only two instances of that kind of happening. But the governor said that.
That
both of these people were his good friends, and they were good friends with one another. And he said that every now and then people get too passionate and things can get out of hand.
Okay, AJ, you hear that bumper music, I know.
AJ, to be continued, because there's definitely different strokes for different folks. The standards are held differently. We understand that, man. We look forward to promoting But on the Other Hand at KBRS 106.9 FM. And KKAY, I'm glad you don't have another K in that KK. KKAY 1590 AM. We look forward to getting together with you, man, and talk about a lot of the other issues. And do you have a website or an email with how people can get in touch with you to stay on top of the issues out there in the region?
Yeah, it's KKAY globalradio.com.
Well, we look forward to continuing this discussion and many more topics in the future, man. God bless you. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Have
very
a wonderful
much,
Memorial
very much.
Weekend
you
with you and your family.
Day.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. AJ, then Donaldsonville and Central Parish. When we come back, we're going to be continue, man. Hey, the lines are, phones are back on. Y'all better call. We'll be back after the break.
You're listening to WBOK, New Orleans.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to The Good Morning Show. Man, we want to thank AJ, man, the host of But on the Other Side at KBRS 106.9 FM and KKAY 1590 AM out there in the river parishes up
Deepville.
There. Yeah, Deepville. Donaldsonville. Man, thank you, man. You never know who's listening to the good.
Huh? I tell you, we got a big reach,
good
man.
Good morning show, man. It's been really, as I travel around the region, man, and I'm in little towns and I go places for events, and people are like, hey, man, how the early bird? And I'm like, you know, well, I used to be jealous, right? But now I accept it.
Ladies and gentlemen in New Orleans, don't go to lunch with Oliver Thomas unless you have a really big ego, is all I have to say. Don't do it. Let me just tell you guys, we go to lunch, you know, on a regular basis. And the last time we went, you know, I know a few people, right? So I walk in the restaurant. I'm not a big shot. Don't get this twisted. But I might know a person or two. Hey, Jeff, how you doing? Boom, you know, shoot the breeze, that kind of stuff. And so I told people, you know, I'm waiting on, I beat him there. And so, he walks in, it's like, woo, like Beyonce or somebody. Everybody in the room turns around. Mr. Oliver. He had to stop at every table because everybody wanted to talk to him. Everybody wanted to hug him. And I'm like, gee whiz. So, you know, we're sitting down to eat our food. The waitress, what would you like, sir? And she took his order and left. I'm like, do I get to order some food here? He had one.
Lee Harder hates that kind of talk.
Don't go to lunch with Oliver Thomas unless you have a big ego.
Everybody know I got a cute baby.
No. Everybody. That's true.
They know
I
got a cute. They know I'm an old man with cute children.
Everybody's like, how you doing? Oh, it's so good. This one lady, she was sitting across from us. She was the only person who didn't say anything. I was like, oh, good. Finally, somebody who's not a big Oliver fan. When we getting up to leave, she said, bye, Oliver. See you. I'm like, Steve. She said, you spoke at my son's graduation, and you did this, and you helped me. And it. I'm like, everybody in the restaurant, I couldn't get no service. I couldn't get no water. He had to order my food. It was ridiculous. But, I mean, you know, the people love you, OT. The people love you, and it's well-deserved. And I enjoyed watching it. It's well-deserved. And, the response that people give you.
What do I say now, right? So I just can shut up, right? Lee's going to fire me.
It's well-deserved. I mean, listen, you are a contributor to this society, to this city. Wow. You are a leader. You are a man who makes things happen. And I ain't going to lunch with you for a long time.
We better get back to these issues, though. People are like, Oliver, who is the early bird, right?
Yeah, right.
No. Look, these AJ made a really good point in you highlighting the issues. There was no censorship. There wasn't anything but kind of gracious, supportive comments.
It was a joke. Yeah, that they laughed. They had police scene tape at his desk. Like, this is nothing. Like, but the fact is, these guys ought to be sanctioned. I mean, listen, I don't agree with Troy Brown anything that he did, frankly.
Yeah.
But the fact is that he was immediately, quickly, and swiftly tossed out of the Senate, forced to resign. But nothing has happened with these guys. This is not the example that we want our legislators to set.
It was like Sam Houston versus Congressman Stanberry back in the day, right? Let's have a duel.
I'll tell you what, and the fact is, this is not legislative behavior. This is not the kind of thing. We don't want our kids looking up to this kind of stuff. And this is serious. It is not a joke. How can we take any legislation that these guys bring to the table seriously? We can't.
Jeff, before we go in, first of all, thank you again for the
conversation
on Harris. I think we have a good time dealing with these topics and talking to our listening audience.
We do.
But it's also, there's some work that has to be done. Some independent work that has to be done to see what the value is.
Right.
And so let's hope that the folk who are listening do that. Thank you for sharing information with us about the legislative changes. If we're going to have more land-based casinos, then at the end of the day, that diminishes the value of the Harris legislation. So something has to be done to make sure that we're getting the best deal for the city and the best deal for the state. And also, thank you for highlighting. We challenge our legislators a lot, right? Mm-hmm. But when they offer good legislative packages and progressive opportunities to move this state is living in the 20th or the 19th of whatever century that it's in. So whether it's Senator Carter, Joe Bowie, or J.P. Morrell, or many of our other legislators who are out there fighting for interest, we need to commend them when they do something right, and they did.
And the Legislative Black Caucus has helped push this agenda. Now, they have a tough fight ahead with this tax situation. I mean, regressive state sales taxes is not the way to go. It's a short-term solution to a long-term problem, and it's a Band-Aid approach. We need real legislative tax reform.
We say 6 cents one way, half a dozen the other. Well, this is half a cent one way.
Right.
Half a cent the other.
Right. And the fact is
tough
that
decision.
Listen, we need the Stelly plan or something similar to it. We need to change our income tax structure. And these yahoos, as I call them, from North and Mid Louisiana, with what's rather on the backs of poor black people and poor white people to balance the budget.
I want to talk about something, Jeff, before we get into we end the segment, especially on what continues to happen with police brutality, mass shootings. In America, and the lack of a real conversation about keeping us safe, no matter where we are. I think this greater conversation about fiscal responsibility, what is government's baseline, at some point, right, I think federal, state, and local governments need to do, also do some independent analysis. What are the bare essentials, right, in delivering public services, protecting your citizenry? How big should government be? I know there's some caution in having a state constitutional convention because all kind of crazy things could happen. But when you talk about being fiscally responsible, we cannot continue having cuts into the most critical areas. We can't continue in our city knowing that we have infrastructure that's falling apart. You know, which should be maintain, repair, and replace? At Sewage and Water Board. I said yesterday, we can talk about all these other social ills, issues, but community schools, public safety, economic opportunity. But if the streets are full of water, we can't live here. So what is the responsibility of government? And I'm going to take the federal government out of it.
Let's talk New Orleans.
What is the responsibility of government, state and local, to say, hey, look, this is what we need. This is our baseline, and this is what we have to have to keep you safe and to keep you dry.
Right. So, right, listen, the biggest disappointment that I've had so far with Mayor Cantrell is her – and listen, when she first came out, she hired a police chief. I may disagree with some of his policies.
She made a decision.
She made a decision. She hired a fire chief. She hired all of her top administrative staff. She brought in a CAO from Arizona, was it? New Mexico?
New Mexico.
Right.
Montana.
She brought in a
chief financial officer
from Detroit who has some baggage associated with him. Is it her? But the most important, we've said this on your show many times, the most important thing in the city of New Orleans is the pumping situation. Mm-hmm. If we can't keep the city dry, we don't have
here.
A place to live.
Live here.
And the fact that she came into office and has not hired to date a director for the Sewage and Water Board, to me, is problematic.
I understand there's a search.
There's a search. Let me tell you. She Troy Henry, who you and I supported for mayor, who she knows well, she's met with, I think, he exemplified the knowledge of what it takes to run the Sewage and Water Board on the campaign trail. If he brought one issue forward.
He's got some great ideas about the system.
He's got great ideas. He's got experience. He's run water companies. He ran United Water. He, to me, would be the best choice. We don't have to have this national search. We have a guy right here in town who can run it. The fact is that we don't have anybody, at least place him in the interim position. We don't have anybody right now. And that, to me, is a glaring misstep from our new mayor. This, if we don't have the Sewage and Water Board on lock, if we don't know about everything that's happening with sewer and water, if we don't need baselines for flooding, the baseline is the streets should be dry. That unless we get some cataclysmic kind of rain, some 500 inches, I'm sorry, God forbid, some 5 inches in an hour, we should not expect to have any flooding anywhere in this city. We should, at this point now in our history, have the best water pumping system in the world. We may already. I don't know. But I can tell you that we need a leader of the Sewage and Water Board. And if we don't have a leader in the Sewage and Water Board, and I think I put forward Troy Henry.
I don't know if he wants it or not. I'm not going to I understand your position. Whoever she wants to hire, I mean, that's up to the mayor. I would tell her if you make a decision, whoever it is, fight for that decision. Tell folk why. And have a reason. If it's the wrong decision, then you change it and you move on. And you do something
like
else.
Warren Riley,
let the public or the media determine who you hire. Don't let political brokers and operators tell you.
If it's people who you're comfortable with.
But I have also been having conversation with men and women who work within the system. Mm-hmm. Many are very educated. They're engineers. They're professionals. Mm-hmm. They know how to operate the pumps. They've operated the system. Some have retired. I think a conversation with them about the system, about what we need to do to move forward with the system. I would love for her and her team to start talking to the folk that are actually doing the work. That guy who knows the sequence to press those switches to turn on those pumps, that guy who understood why they lost money for maintenance that should have gotten from FEMA but went into the general fund or was mm-hmm. not appropriated to do mm-hmm. Maintenance and replacement. Mm-hmm. I would implore her team that you and I talk to them. Mm-hmm. It would be probably wise if her and her team would talk to them. I think sometimes, man, we legislate and we administrate over people's heads.
And what do you mean by that?
What I mean is that we have these high-level discussions about what ought to be mm-hmm. instead of having these discussions, grassroots discussions with people about what is
right.
and what should be.
Right.
And we can talk about the guys who, you got too many guys around this pothole, or why you got six people out there when a line breaks, because if a couple of them drown, you got somebody else
listen,
there to dive in that hole. And we can criticize them. But they do the work every day.
That's right.
So if they're entrusted to do the work every day, then why shouldn't somebody ask them about what's the best way and best practices to do the work?
Absolutely right. You know? Absolutely right. And all of that's important. But you can't do any of that
without a leader.
You don't have a leader. Yeah. We need a leader tomorrow. Yeah. Listen, we got a storm out there that's going to bring rain our way. The climate change, as Cedric Grant said, is real. Y'all better get used to this flood.
It may not have been the right time for him to say it in right. the middle of a, right. but it was.
But the fact is that as the ecology and the climate changes
nature does not have to insist.
Right, right. As we get more rain, right. we need to be able to handle more rain. And so we've always been told what you get. Inch an hour, inch the first hour, half an inch every half hour, something like that. Whatever that party line has been with the sewage and water board. The fact is, we need somebody who can tell us what the reality is. We need the truth. We don't need distorted pictures. We need and somebody who's competent and able right. to communicate with people about what we don't know.
I thought if you look at the transition team, the plan that was released, and I would encourage citizens and organizations to get a copy of the Forward New Orleans Transition Plan. Mm-hmm. The infrastructure piece and the community engagement piece were two of the most progressive pieces
right.
that I saw. I thought that they were well done.
Which is shocking that we don't have a head of the sewage and water board.
I thought that her team was thoughtful. Mm-hmm. So, and I would think that they should probably start working on those parts of the transition report
right.
Yesterday, because they're critical pieces.
Right.
They were very advanced and progressive in thought. Mayor Lex and her team did a good job there. So I think how you start implementing those things is important.
Right. And I want this to be clear. I want LaToya Cantrell to be the best mayor in the history of the city.
That we've ever had.
We need it. We need
Absolutely.
It right now.
Absolutely.
And I want to do everything I can to support her. And that's why suggesting that she get a head of the sewage and water board is one of the things. I am not being critical. I'm trying to help. I'm trying to be supportive. I'm just
accountability
saying,
is important.
Accountability is important. Not,
you just lost a contract from Harris because of accountability.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And that's another thing. The city has also some stake in this Harris game. I mean, we are the leaseholders, and so we need to get some money from them.
The New Orleans Building Corporation, look, for guys, I remind people, I was in that meeting where Mark Morial, myself, Jim Singleton, and a few others were tossed out of the governor's mansion. Because
who was the governor then? Was that Kathleen Blondin?
It was Evan Edwards, I think. because former mayor Mark Morial was not satisfied with begging for casino support reimbursement. He said that the city had earned the right to have a number that matched what the city supported in civil services. Mm-hmm. He looked the governor in the eye. Mm-hmm. He stood with the people of New Orleans, and he says, man, look, this legislation was done before I got here. It needs to be changed. We need to get value for value, right? He said, we cannot support this multi-million-dollar economic effort here, this big sucking machine here mm-hmm. that's going to suck money out of tourists and gamblers in our community and have to come back here and beg you guys for a few million dollars every year.
That's right.
He was asked to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's the kind of fight that we need. He, you know, there was a lot at stake there. But he told the governor, he said, governor, why do I have to beg you, right? This casino is in New Orleans. Right. We're going to provide food. We're going to provide water. We're going to provide police services. We're going to provide infrastructure, signage, lighting, all of these things. And I got to come here every year and beg you for a piece of what we put into this?
Exactly right.
He didn't accept it.
Right. But and listen, you know, I remember, I think it was the last time I was on, Ed Chervenek came the next day.
Yes.
And he talked about the fact that New Orleans is just a creation of the state of Louisiana. And so we are limited in what we can do. And
right.
But we need to leverage our power. We need to leverage our resources. And we need to, and so maybe we say we don't give Harris a lease. You know what? Harris doesn't get a lease unless we get.
The building corporation and the council have to agree on the lease.
They don't get it. No.
Maybe they don't have to, but that's one of the steps in the process.
So I'm saying that what we need to do is play hardball with the state. We send up $2 and we get back a dollar.
Like Maynard Jackson did with the federal government in
exactly
the airport?
Exactly right. Exactly right. If we don't do that with the state, then the state's going to continue to suck from us. I mean, we are the economic engine of the state.
40% of the state's general revenue.
Exactly right. We provide welfare to these poor white people across the state of Louisiana, from New Orleans. This happens. This is a reality. I know you look down when I said that. You don't like me to be controversial like that. But
you're going
to
get our phone system.
That's why they can't cut us off.
You're going to get us cut off.
I'm sorry. I'm speaking factually, sir.
Jeff Thomas, you're going to. You're going to get a censored cut off.
The fact is that the poor black people in New Orleans work hard in these hotels and in these casinos and generate this income, and that income goes to the state of Louisiana.
You don't see the light flickering right now?
That income goes to the state of Louisiana, and then the state of Louisiana provides all kinds of services in Jeff Davis and Caddo Parish and all around the state of Louisiana, and it's off the sweat of the backs of black people here in the city of New Orleans. So we need to start leveraging our position is all I'm saying. And we've got 4 minutes. Can I talk about the treatment of black people? I just want to say this. How is it that a young white man can walk into a school, shoot 10 people, shoot 10 more people, shoot a police officer, and get walked to the police station? How is it that? But an unarmed black man in his backyard is shot and killed by the police. Why is it that when they are in these tense situations, these highly volatile, highly pressurized situations with black people, they have to kill the black person? But the white who is unarmed, who hasn't done
Sterling
anything.
Sterling Brown, a million-dollar basketball player.
I mean, he parked illegally.
It was over a parking site. They beat the crap out of him.
And tased him.
And tased
him. Threw him on the ground. And then arrested him.
Parking citation.
For parking. I mean, how is it that? How is it? And
I don't even want to say his name. Driving a Lamborghini,
bruh. I don't even want to say his name.
Right.
In Santa Fe, Texas, goes into a school, commits these horrible, heinous acts. And gets walked to the police station. Did they stop at Burger King for him?
No, they did for Dylan Roof.
I don't know. I'm saying, what is it about policing in America that unarmed black men get shot and killed in their own houses and armed with semi-automatic and automatic weapons and weapons of total destruction,
but Jeff
walk
Thomas.
Into schools, shoot a police officer, and get walked out.
But how is that possible?
But
Jeff Thomas, I've had this discussion with people who are fighting for criminal justice reform and accountability. And let me say this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their contention is that black judges and black law enforcement and black prosecutors and black leaders look at black suspects the same way.
Right.
They look at black people the same because the outcomes.
Right. And I know the answer. The answer is implicit bias. The answer is when those officers in Milwaukee, when they saw Sterling Brown in a Lamborghini parked illegally, they had one notion that this was a criminal guy who was doing something wrong and they needed to take him down. The idea that he could have been a star basketball player who had his own money and weighed more than them did not cross the mind.
Minimum contracts in the NBA are $1.5 million.
Implicit bias means when we look at a black suspect, we think danger.
Even when you're black.
An unarmed black man is worthy of being shot. Whereas the same bias, when we see an armed white person, we have to disarm him and we have to take him in. And now, you know, all you're hearing about him is what kind of upbringing he had. All you're hearing about him is, you know, he was bullied and the coaches bullied him. And he's humanized. And
it's a mental health crisis.
Right. And we're demonizing Michael Brown, who got killed in Ferguson, Missouri. And we're demonizing Alton Sterling, who got killed in Baton Rouge.
Eric Garner.
Eric, all of them. And so the difference is this implicit bias. Now, I'm saying to you, this is internal. This is unconscious. This is not something we think about at the moment.
But Jeff Thomas,
this is part of our psyche. This is part of the fact.
But Jeff Thomas,
go ahead.
Before you get us. The whole station shuts down.
The lights are flickering.
You know, before we don't have enough money in the African American community. We don't have enough black business folk here, mm-hmm. Many who are even interested. We don't have enough African American wealth here to keep this station afloat.
Mm-hmm.
We can tell the truth all we want. We can talk about issues all we want.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the reality is. And in many cases, there are not even enough people in our community who even care about what we do in supporting the station. So we take a chance mm-hmm. when we do stuff like this.
Right.
But before
I'm
we,
sorry.
But no. I'm not asking. I'm not telling you to apologize. I'm just dealing with our realities here.
Right.
The families who work here
mm-hmm.
suffered.
Mm-hmm.
We've been penalized by corporate interests and political interests
mm-hmm.
already.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who count on this paycheck
mm-hmm.
Every day. Their kids eat.
Sure.
Their families eat. So it is not fair that we have to walk a chalk line because we risk not only having our power cut off, our lines cut off. It's a challenge to walk that chalk line, mostly because there's not enough money in our own community to support us. As much as people say they like and they value the discussion,
right.
As much as they say, where would we be without WBOK advocating for our community, We don't have the resources to support what we need here. But at the end of the day, we're going to do what we do, and
right.
the risk are what they are.
Right.
What has to happen, man, to stop this, right? How do we get mm-hmm. the guns off the street?
Mm-hmm.
How do we have accountability? How do we have a national policy
mm-hmm.
that governs? You know, we don't even have a national policy, a
we
uniform
can't.
Policy that deals with police
we can't.
Procedure.
Let me tell you, I think the answer is this. The answer is in capitalism. The answer is in politics. The answer is in capitalism.
This is,
you know, we live in a system that's capitalistic mm-hmm. and democratic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the capitalism really fused the democracy, mm-hmm. the politics. People with money control the political sphere. I mean, we got a president
that's
a billionaire.
Great point. You're right. I think you're right.
And so the way we can do this is it starts with us. We have to understand our own value. And we have to start understanding that, you know, our ice is cold. And when we support ourselves, when we support our own businesses, when we would rather go to Sterling Farms than Rouse's. Does Rouse's advertise here?
Uh-huh.
When we would rather go to you know, H&W drugstore.
We'd rather go to Magazine Street than we'd have.
Right. If we go to H&W drugstore versus than one
the
of
Neo,
the national chains.
Then exactly. Morrow's.
Exactly right. The Kitchen. That's a great place over on the West Bank, I tell you.
That's
I love
right.
that food. Chef Bruce Rollins is a great chef. When we start understanding the value of ourselves, then other people will value. We don't value ourselves enough. And until we are able to spend money within ourselves, until we create the capital within our own community that already exists, we talked about it earlier, channeling our money.
Jeff Thomas, we've talked about a lot of things that are byproducts of whatever the issues, the social ills, history,
mm-hmm.
The isms, whatever they are. But you're still saying there's a lot of work that has to happen within our own community, even while we're dealing with these external issues.
Yeah, but listen, we can deal with the external issues. The political system is going to we've pushed the political system. We do the things that we do on a daily basis. That's
mm-hmm.
why we think 504 exists. That's why WBOK exists. I mean, we hold our elected officials accountable. We hold their feet to the fire. We push them to do the right thing. That's the political side of things. But the change only is going to occur when we understand capital, we understand that this is not a democratic system we live in. This is a capitalistic system we live in. And capital, money, is the source of power in America. And we have money in our community. The problem is it flies out as soon as we get it because
right.
we don't spend our money at H&W. We go to Walgreens. We don't spend our money at the Kitchen or Neo's. We go to
anywhere else,
right? And that's okay to go to those other places occasionally, but also primarily and intentionally spend our money in our community.
I had a very disturbing conversation with friends and young relatives, millennials, and I was giving them the story of what H&M did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, H&M did, they portrayed the young, the monkey.
Oh, yeah, the monkey.
Monkey and a young
uh-huh.
black man.
All right, right.
And they listened to me, and they heard the story. And when I saw them, they had bags. They were shopping at H&M.
Right.
And they were all under 40 and in their 20s. And even though they were taken aback mm-hmm. by the story, they were saddened by it, these young African Americans still went to shop at H&M.
That's a store I've never been in. I don't.
I won't go in.
Right. I won't, based on what I've seen. And we have to control our resources, and I'm repeating myself, but I think it's important, and I'm going to try to emphasize it. We live in this America is a dualistic system of capitalism and politics, democracy, and mm-hmm. it's a representative democracy, but we won't dig into those weeds. Let's focus on capitalism. The fact is we are frozen out of capital through banking discrimination. We are frozen. And so how do you fight that? You force the politicians to outlaw banking discrimination. And we're frozen out. But before we even get there, if you took the amount of money, resources that are in the African-American community in America,
yeah.
we would be in the top 100. No, we would be in the top 75.
The 11th or 12th largest nation in the world. About $1.3 trillion. We've generated enough money within our own community that we could sustain and support ourselves.
Exactly right. And the fact that
we're still only 13% of the population.
The fact that we don't is the fact – listen, we have implicit bias against ourselves. We think we have an inferiority complex. I hate to be on the radio talking about this because it makes me uncomfortable. But it's a fact, and in my estimation, it's my opinion about what I see about what ails us. And because we think other ice is colder, because we don't value ourselves, we spend our money and our resources, and we take it out of our communities. And as a black business owner, I can tell you that I have to fight and claw and scratch, just like WBOK does, for all of the resources that I get from the mainstream society and from our community.
But let me ask you this question, and we got to end this segment.
Yeah.
This is just but it's cut and dry. First of all, thank you for being provocative and making me think.
I'm sorry for turning the phone on.
No, you've gotten us in a lot of trouble today, but I think it's necessary conversations.
Right.
Is it the white man's fault? Is it the black politician's fault? Or is it our fault?
Well, you know, there's a gumbo here. And there are many ingredients in this gumbo. And all parts of the gumbo are necessary. And all parts of the gumbo is what makes it taste good, or in this case makes it a real gumbo. And certainly we have culpability, real culpability. We have to think about it. We have to work on ourselves. We have to spend money in our own community. We have to treat each other kindly. We have to be nice to each other. We have to be polite to each other. Let me just say this.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I wanted to say
Go
earlier.
Ahead.
This is a situation that happened to me just the other day. I was in a home improvement store,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in line. I got a cart full of lumber. You know, mm-hmm. one of the ways I'm able to talk a lot of trash is that I work hard and do all
yes,
this construction
yes,
stuff and all that kind of stuff, right? So
you get dirty.
So there was this white man who had one item.
Mm-hmm.
So the line that I was in took a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So he got out of the line. He was right ahead of him. He got out of the line and walked to what he thought was a shorter line.
Mm-hmm.
And then that line started taking a long time. So he walked back and got in front of me. And I said, wait, I'm not the black man to do that to. I said, wait a minute. Excuse me, sir. He said, well, I said, you were out of line. You got over there. He
you
said,
were out of line.
You got out of line. I said,
you were out of line
move.
And out of line.
Yeah. I said, you move, you lose. Now, how you just figure you can walk in front of me? How do you figure it's okay that you can get out of line, go stand in another line that you don't want to be in, and then come back and get in front of me? Well, I was already here. No, you got out of this line. And he said, well, I just have one thing. I said, I don't care if you got 100 things. You're not going to just come and get in front of me.
Lord,
that is not happening.
Lord, you're going to get us. Lord, you're going to get us in even more.
See, Let me tell you something.
You didn't let that man get back in front of you.
It was a big sign. It was a big scene. It was a big scene. You know who was upset with me the most?
Yeah,
the black people were upset with me for treating that white man rudely. The black people were looking at me like, why did you be mean to that man? Why would that man got out of line? I'm in a rush. He ain't leave. But you know what? I ultimately.
Well, your people thought you were out of line.
Yeah, they did. I ultimately said, you know what? Go ahead. Because you do just have one thing. But I'm saying, you're not going to just get in front of me. You're going to treat me with respect.
Privilege.
And that's what I told him. I said, you don't have the privilege to just come and get in front of me in line. That ain't happening, sir.
That's an interesting story.
Was I wrong?
But it's an interesting story, Jeff Thomas. It's real, but it's kind of the way things work.
Yeah, yeah.
And
hopefully it lights
I hope people can get to the moral of that story and understand the work we have to do in all of our communities to treat each other as equals.
Yeah, that's right.
And at the end of the day, that's what you were trying to say.
That's what I Yeah, thank you. Thank you, OT, for getting me straight. I hope the phone stay on. Jeff, I'm sorry, AT&T. Jeff, I ain't going to say nothing else
Jeff,
today.
first of all, God bless you, man. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you, OT.
Once again, thank you for highlighting issues and getting ahead of issues that in many cases our legislators and folk who should don't think about. But also thank you for being courageous enough to take on the topics that are important, to challenge and demand accountability, but also to give credit when credit is due. We appreciate that. Yeah. How can people get in touch with you? I think 504.com.
They can go to think504.com. When they go onto the site, it'll ask them to sign up right away. They can sign up and start getting it. We only go out 2 days a week on Mondays and Thursdays. We don't flood your mailbox. We send out real informative information, a lot more intelligent stuff than what I talked about today, hopefully. But it's provocative and insightful, hopefully. And
very provocative.
Let me just say, we got to get on this Harris deal. We really have to get to, because what the state has done is dilute the power of the Harris Casino license. They've done that intentionally, in my mind. And so we need to get as much money as we that we can right now. Absolutely. The
Jeff Thomas, think504.com. You promise to come back next month?
You know, brother, if you have me on Big Brother, I'm here.
We'll have you back next month for all of our listening audience.
To lunch, though.
People who tolerate us and put up with us. We appreciate you. And always remember this, right? Stay in the locker room. Take a knee. But stand for something. This is the Good Morning Show. Everybody have a wonderful day.